Few people were moving about on the streets, and the Outlanders stayed in the shadows as much as possible. They backtracked out of the moonlight when a squad of armed troopers ran by, heading for the front gate. The men were armed with flintlock pistols, crossbows, and nets. An unnerving sight, those. It meant they wanted to capture the companions alive.
Looks like he was telling the truth.
Could be. But he betrayed his own baron to repay us, so who's to say he didn't do the same thing to us for some other reason? Trust nobody.
Not even the dead. I remember.
Gaia, watch over us this night.
Distant thunder seemed to rumble in reply to Christie's prayer. But whether that was an agreement or denial, there was no way to know. There were bright lights and drunken singing coming from the gaudy house, and as they passed by, they saw someone relieving himself in the street.
Ah, civilization.
Easily avoiding some people hurrying, Ryan led them on a circular path to finally reach the Baron's home from the other side. Crouching, they hid in some bushes while a contingent of guards and sailors marched past, long blasters cradled in their arms. Baron Thayer was in the squad, as was a stranger in the livery of the Lord Baron. Ryan frowned. So that was Glassman, their new hunter. The Deathlands warrior didn't know what happened to Brandon, but he hoped it was painful and lasting. They would have been long gone if not for the Sekhman's interference. Doc squinted into the darkness.
I do not see the latrine.
Me neither.
Ryan was forced to agree. Even with the pale moonlight coming through the clouds, he still couldn't see much of anything. However, the ville was becoming well lighted, torches burning on every corner. Oddly, the palace was still masked by the night. To lure them there? Could be. Just then, a couple of Sekhmen walked slowly by, speaking softly, long blasters resting on their shoulders.
Let's ask for directions.
Jack pulled out a leaf-bladed knife, and the men moved, sliding up behind the Sekhmen. Ryan placed the curved blade of his panga around the throat of one, the touch of the cold steel making the man freeze motionless. Jack thrust his blade into the head of the second man, just to the right of the spine, where it joined the skull. The man stopped moving instantly. Then the teenager twisted the blade, and the Sekhmen exhaled once, sliding to the dirt as if his bones had turned into water. Ryan whispered in the Sekhman's ear,
"Cry out, and you're chilled. Now drop it."
The blaster fell to the grass.
"Okay. Where is the Baron's private latrine?"
"What?"
Jack stabbed the man in the upper arm, then grabbed the fresh wound and squeezed. The Sekhman inhaled sharply, tears coming to his eyes before the teen finally let go.
"You bastards!"
"Not what I want to know."
Ryan nodded, and Jack tightened his grip again, blood welling between his strong fingers. The Sekhman broke into a sweat.
Okay, no more. It's past the horse corral, behind the woodpile."
Ryan maintained his position while Jack disappeared into the darkness to return a few minutes later with his thumb up.
"You get to live."
"And you get to die, motherfucker!"
The guard unexpectedly broke free and spun with a blade in his palm. He slashed for Ryan's belly, but the man swayed out of the way, and Jack buried his blade into the guard's left kidney. Caught in the middle of a shout, the Sekhman could only gasp from the pain, and Ryan kicked the doubled-over man directly in the face. Bones audibly crunching from the strike, the guard fell sprawling, a hand clawing madly for his dropped blaster. Silver flashed in the moonlight as Doc lunged forward, spearing the man through the heart with his sword. The Sekhman jerked at the strike, then went still. Placing a boot on his chest, Doc yanked the blade out and wiped it clean on the dead man's shirt. Following Jack across the grounds, the friends easily found the latrine just past the horse corral. The small wooden hut was surrounded by weeds and placed strategically behind the tall pile of cut wood so that nobody could see who was entering or leaving. Footsteps on the gravel made everybody pause, and they waited for discovery as the horses were released from the stable and a dozen troopers rode off.
"Looking for us. Better hurry."
Going to the opposite end of the woodpile, Ryan and Jack kept silent watch for more Sekhmen while Mildred used her flashlight to illuminate the padlock on the door. Removing some tools from his munitions bag, JB got busy with picks and probes, the lock yielding in under a minute.
"Piece of junk."
He slid the chain through the loops and placed it gently in the weeds.
"Could have kicked it open except for the noise."
Easing open the old splintery door, Ryan found there was no floor, only a knotted rope hanging into the darkness. Fireblast. It was the Cannyville all over again. Hopefully this time there wouldn't be an ambush waiting for them. Reaching into a pocket, Ryan pulled out a Gren and made sure the pin was firmly in place, the tape tight around the priming handle. Going to the hole, he dropped the Gren down the hole and listened. 3 seconds later, there was a thump of it landing, and then silence. No reaction to its arrival.
It's clear.
After climbing down the rope a couple of yards, Ryan dropped the last few feet and landed with his blaster out, sweeping for targets. He was in a brick tunnel that extended into the distance in both directions. There was a diffuse light coming from bulbs inside wire cages along the ceiling. The electricity was probably coming from nuke batteries buried in the walls, and even those pre-dark powerhouses were slowly dying over the long centuries. The Gren had rolled a few feet down the tunnel, and he reclaimed the explosive charge, double-checking to make sure the pin and handle were in place. Just then, the rope jiggled, and Dean dropped to the concrete floor, blaster in one hand, bowie knife in the other.
We're alone.
Ryan tugged the rope 3 times to signal it was okay for the others to come down. Soon the companions were gathered together, and Jack put his lighter to the rope, the old hemp slowly igniting and starting to burn upward out of sight.
Wet rope top with canteen, so no burn latrine.
Mildred watched the fire crackling up the access way.
Well, it'll certainly slow down any pursuit.
It was concrete pipe with rusty holes along the side, where iron rungs had been set for easy access. Only rust stains marked where they had once been inserted into the resilient material.
Indeed, madam. That is, until they find another rope. My dear Ryan, I really cannot voice my sincere wish to vacate this untoward locale quite strenuously enough.
Yeah, we've got to blow this pest hole.
Ryan stabbed his knife through the wire cage to break the bulb and plunge that section of the tunnel into darkness. Give the Baron something else to worry about if he made it down here.
Which way leads to the sea?
Tilting back his fedora, JB checked his pocket compass and pointed.
That way goes inland, toward the jungle. The other heads to the ocean.
Could be a wag hidden in the trees, or a boat on the beach. A boat was what they needed, so they might as well head for the water.
I'm on point. JB covers the rear. 3 foot spread.
Walking on the toes of their boots to try to hold down the echoes, the companions soon saw a flickering silvery light from ahead and rushed forward to find the end of the brick tunnel blocked by a wall of falling water. Doc tested the depths with his sword and pronounced it safe. Shielding his blaster with his body, Ryan dashed through and found himself on the sandy shore of a small lagoon. A waterfall rushing from overhead completely masked the entrance of the tunnel, where the freshwater fed into a small pool filled with tropical fish. The shore was edged with tall mango trees, festooned with fishing nets laced with green leaves. In the background, he could hear the gentle sounds of waves cresting on the sand. But it was impossible to see anything on the other side of the disguising barrier. Thayer had done a good job here. Then Ryan noticed something large and covered with canvas moored on the nearby beach. There was their boat. Going to the waterfall, he stuck a hand through and gestured for the others to join him. In short order, the rest of the companions exited the tunnel and marveled at the beautiful hidden grotto and its pristine golden beach. Mildred squeezed some of the excess water from her beaded locks.
That our boat?
Hope so.
Grabbing a fistful of canvas, he yanked hard. The material easily slid off, exposing a wag underneath. Not an ocean-going vessel of any kind. It was a pre-dark school bus, covered in splotches of green and brown, jungle camo. The glass windows along both sides had been replaced with thick sheet metal tack welded into place, and the front windshield was protected by a heavy iron grid, the bar studded with knife blades gleaming with oil. The rear window and the exit door had the same. Triangular spikes with barbed tips jutted from the rims of the wheels, and double tires were bolted to each axle, giving the wag tremendous traction. Blasters were everywhere, but there were no attached weapons that they could spot. With all the weight of the armor, Ryan doubted the wag made much speed, but it looked ready to travel. Jimmying open the door, JB climbed inside and saw that the back of the wag was stacked high with crates and barrels of supplies, poorly lettered wording showing what each contained. Lead, black powder, dry fish, water, chicken, and such. Crates of long blasters filled the rear seats, and a crossbow hung from the ceiling, along with quivers of bolts.
Enough supplies here to start a new vill.
I think that was the idea. How fortunate for us.
JB took a seat by the front door.
Well, this clunker isn't War Wag 1 or the Leviathan, but it'll do for today.
Jack went straight to the rear door and checked its status, while Dean took a spot in the middle. Closing the double doors, Ryan dropped his backpack and sat just behind the driver's seat. Christy slid behind the wheel and turned the ignition switch.